On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin.
My name is Evan.
And you have a mouthful of 7-Eleven pizza.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. We have a podcast about the portrayal of women in movies. It's inspired by the Bechdel test. Here are the things about the test. There have to be women in the movie. They have to have names. They have to talk to each other. And their conversation can't be about a man.
Don't understand.
Right? Why must we have this?
Ugh. Sounds boring.
Lame.
Well, today is an episode. I didn't know if I was going to be excited for it, and then I watched the movie. I was like, you know what? I'm really excited.
Oh, my God. Well, let's jump in. But first, we have a guest. Speaking of men.
He's been restrained.
Yes. He's lowering his head in shame for being a man, as he should.
We didn't bring out the chains this time. It's just bungees.
Right. Yeah.
Just bungees. If no one seems too aggressive, we're like, okay, you're bungeed. Mm-hmm. He could escape if he really wanted.
Right. But we'll fight back.
But he seems fine. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be great. Because he is great. He is the co-host of the Percast. He's the producer of My Favorite Murder. And he's the host of a new podcast about the movie we're talking about today, Jurassic Park. It's called See Jurassic Right. Stephen Ray Morris.
Beow, 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 beow.
Thank you both for having me.
Thanks.
I'm super excited.
For being here. I know.
We are happy.
You're a Jurassic Park
scholar.
Expert.
Whoa.
You're a scholar.
That's a lot of pressure.
pressure.
I mean, I think it's one of those things where you're like, you know, when you're in college and you're like, I want to love, like, insert impressive movie title here. But then I think over time I was like, you know what? This is my favorite movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just this is the thing that brings me the most joy. So.
And you've written a collection of essays?
A collection of essays on Thought Catalog. Just kind of
like
the phase one of the podcast that I'm doing now, which is just me wanting to just excessively nerd out about like the things that I just like about this movie and this franchise, you know, problems with it, things that are interesting to talk about, all that kind of stuff. Because I went to film school, so it was just a way to almost feel like I was using my degree.
Time out. I just want everyone to know that I do have 2 degrees in film. One of them is a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University.
This is my This is my new thing. I'm gonna start being a denier and be like. Show us the diploma.
I have a diploma at my house. I will take a photo of it and Instagram it.
I'm going to be a truther. I'm going to be a Caitlin grad school truther. We haven't seen the diploma. We don't know.
Okay. I'll prove it. I've got proof.
We're going to turn this into a dystopian podcast in which I am Donald Trump.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I would like to be the villain, please.
Okay. Hey, that's fine. We need villains out there. Without evil, there could be no good, so it's good to be evil sometimes. That is a line from a song from the South Park movie.
Here's what my dad used to say when he would be smoking outside of our house, and I'd say, hey, Dad, stop smoking. That's bad for you. He'd say, sometimes it feels good to be bad. And then he'd keep smoking.
Cool.
I was pretty cool. I mean, in that way, I probably should be a smoker because that's a moment where it's like, well, I'm sold.
Seems. Yeah.
Well, Stephen, question for you.
Yes.
So we're talking about the 93 OG Jurassic Park. Is this your favorite one out of all of the
Yeah,
ones?
Definitely.
Okay.
I mean,
it's the only good one. So.
Okay, I believe you.
I mean, it's that thing with Jurassic Park that the unfortunate thing is that unlike other bigger franchises, the original is just so far and away better than the other ones that it's like people probably don't even know that there were other ones.
Yeah. Lost World, the second one, wasn't terrible, but by no means is it as good as Jurassic Park.
No, it's kind of a drag. And even Steven Spielberg said he was like, it's not as good. And I was kind of bored.
I love that he admits movies he's directed are not that good. He's like, Temple of Doom, I don't care for it.
Yeah. Stinker. Yeah. I appreciate. I mean, I guess once you reach a certain point of money, you're like, well, may as well tell the truth.
Yeah.
I love that I was reading a lot about the product. I mean, I'm sure I'm stating I'm going to bring no new facts to the table for most people. But I love that he was like doing post for this movie while filming Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Just for some levity at the end of the day. He's like, well, we've been doing the list all day. I'm going back to my little whatever probably very nice house I'm staying at, and I'm going to look at some dinos to wind
some dino
down.
Dailies.
Oh, some dino dailies, yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that like that would be the levity at the end of the day. He's like, let's do the Schindler's List dailies first, and then I'll watch the Jurassic
Park. We don't have a but I would have to assume you don't want to watch the Schindler's List dailies before bed. You want to watch the dinos.
I would imagine.
How are the dinosaur robots coming along? That seems that seems like a better midnight snack.
Yeah.
I'll do the recap of Jurassic Park.
Please do.
Okay, I will. So we meet a velociraptor, and it's like, I'm going to eat somebody.
Make a lot of ambient dino noises.
Great.
Instead of interrupting.
So we learn that there's a thing called Jurassic Park. It's an amusement park. But because there was this attack, the creator of Jurassic Park, John Hammond, needs to bring on these experts to endorse this park. So he finds Dr. Grant and Dr. Sattler, these paleo...
Is this a hotties only rule? It's like, I need experts, but only hot experts.
Yes.
Hot scientists only.
Yeah. Good rule.
I mean, that's true to the book in all of Michael Crichton, where he only allowed... Well, at least in terms of, you know, if we're getting into the podcast itself, like Michael Crichton only allowed hot women to be scientists in his books. Like I've read all of his books, and it's like for him, he can't see outside of that. It's like you can be a math genius, but you still have to be hot.
Crichton!
He's on notice.
I went through a weird Michael Crichton phase when I was a kid where I read a lot. I didn't read Jurassic Park, but I read a lot of Michael Crichton books. I was a real Crichton head. Yeah.
What was your favorite?
The one with all the numbers was the one where was it?
Andromeda Strain?
No, I got to look it up. It was not a good one, but I was like really obsessed with a movie of his. Proceed. I'll figure out what my little Crichton thing was.
So he approaches these two dinosaur experts and is like, come endorse my park. And they're like, well, okay, because he promises to fund their dig. They just found a raptor skeleton. Anyway, meanwhile, there's a lawyer also, and he's like, I just don't know about this. I represent these investors, and I don't. There's an accident, and it's everything's. I don't know. And then,
Prey.
Oh, Prey.
Oh yeah, we were just Prey. Yeah. Prey is not
Nano. There's. I was just remember being like, ooh, Nano, cool. And then Next. That was another really bad Michael Crichton book that I read.
Oof. I haven't read any of them, including Jurassic Park.
Yeah, what? I think he tapped out at some point. He's got a million billion dino dollars.
Yeah, he doesn't need to.
He doesn't have to be good
anymore.
Well, he's dead. Wait, he's dead?
R.I.P.
No, I didn't know he was dead. Wow, I just felt that. I just like felt that in my gut.
He died on election night when Obama was elected, 2008.
Do you think of that?
Again, Lord,
whatever you're about to say, I do think.
Lord giveth, Lord taketh away.
Well, I was talking with someone yesterday about how, I forget why it came up. Oh, I was on a date and I was really struggling for topics. And I said that, hey, the day I was born, Larry Bird retired. And my mom thought that his spirit of greatness went into me.
So you not only have Larry Bird's spirit, but you also have Patrick Swayze? Because you shared the same birthday?
The angels have my back. But the funny thing is, my mom would always say, you have Larry Bird's spirit of greatness. Larry Bird is not dead. He just retired that day. So Larry Bird's walking around without his spirit because I have it.
Because you have it.
Because I have it. And that's why I'm so good at basketball. Mm-hmm. The end.
Yep. Anyway, so I'm going to get through this recap as quickly as possible.
Yes.
The dino experts, they come. They arrive. They come. They arrive they to come. Jurassic Park.
Park.
Along with Dr. Ian Malcolm, who's a chaotician.
Is that Jeff Goldblum?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why does every hot lady in L.A. have a picture with Jeff Goldblum touching them?
Because he plays at the Rockwell.
And he needs to cut it out. It's starting to look perverted. I need him to stop.
Every man on Tinder, if you live in L.A., has a photo with Jeff Goldblum. Those are the rules.
He needs to make a new rule of I'm not going to touch the audience members anymore. Friend of the cast. Josh Fadem brought this up. He was like, why does everyone have a picture? Where do you go? Where do you get one? And I was like, wherever, I know where you go. There's a place and a time, and you bring an Instagram and you get a million likes. It's a cheat code, Jeff Goldblum pervert. Done.
Okay.
It's a promotion. Yeah. Promotional campaign.
Do you really live here if you don't have a weird perverted picture with Jeff Goldblum hunching over and touching you after playing jazz music. I don't know.
All sweaty.
You know what?
I like Jeff Goldblum, so I am I would let him touch me.
Well, consent is important.
That is a big message we have here on the podcast.
Especially when it comes to Jeff Goldblum's jazz concerts. I wouldn't consent to attend a Jeff Goldblum jazz concert, but
that's
to
fine.
Each their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has to come to me.
Okay.
He should come to one of the comedy shows I do in a basement.
Right. He should be going to supporting more live alt comedy.
Hey, Jeff Goldblum, what's your problem? Why do you hate the arts?
Come on out to the comedy scene in L.A.
I mean, he has time to sell tacos from a taco truck. Why not
really?
Go support?
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right, well, more on that later.
Sorry.
We got a story to talk about. They arrive at Jurassic Park, and they're like, holy fuck. They didn't even know dinosaurs were going to be there. And the dinosaur experts were like, whoa, I guess our jobs are obsolete. And then there's this guy named Dennis Nedry, who feels that he was not paid well enough by Jurassic Park creator John Hammond. And he decides to fuck them over by selling the embryos of the dinosaurs to a competing company, I suppose. So he has to like do all this stuff where he shuts down different systems and security things.
Lots of grids.
Around the park, tons of grids.
Mm-hmm.
He shuts them all down so that he can steal these embryos, and then he leaves with them.
Shaving can.
In a shaving can.
Good product placement.
Right. So he basically makes it so the whole park, all the security measures, all the electric fences and everything like that are shut down and totally off. So the dino experts and John Hammond's grandchildren, Lex and Tim, show up and they're like, we want to go on the ride too. So they go on this little Jurassic Park tour, but all the systems shut down and the dinosaurs start to come out. They're like, ooh, there's a goat. No. So T-Rex shows up.
I'm going to become a Foley
artist. Yeah. But only with your mouth.
I'm going to become a mouth Foley.
Yeah. Anyway, T-Rex shows up. Dilophosaurus shows up.
Ah.
The raptors get out of their cage and all hell breaks loose, just like Ian Malcolm predicted.
Hey, do you guys want to take a picture with me? I play the piano.
He's like, life finds a way. Then life does find a way. He was right.
That's Jeff Goldblum's I See Dead People.
Yeah.
Shout out to Haley Joel. Friend of the cast.
Friend of the cast, Haley Joel. Where are you?
I'm kidding. You won't answer.
So hell breaks loose. A bunch of people die, including the lawyer guy and Muldoon, this British safari man, we'll call him. Mm-hmm. And then they all have to like, oh, fuck, how do we? And then they turn the systems back on. There's this great climactic scene where the raptors are about to get them. And then T-Rex swoops in and saves the day.
Mm-hmm.
The end. And then he's like, Mr. Hammond, I've decided not to endorse your park. So have I.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
good recap.
That was a good one. I usually do a fucking terrible job.
That was really good.
I think it's because I've had most of a small bottle of wine.
I think that we should encourage people to drink more alcohol and then they'll do a better job at whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah, maybe not the best message to
I wasn't being sarcastic.
Okay.
Now I just feel like I should have brought something to drink.
Yeah, sorry.
Listen, sometimes it feels good to be bad.
Okay, so that's the story.
But what does it mean?
What does it mean?
That's why you're here.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, if you can't tell, I love this movie so much. It's probably one of my top five favorite movies of all time. I have seen it dozens of times. I love it, and it's so good. It's, I would say, a perfect movie.
Yeah.
It's so good. Jamie, you just saw it.
I was thrilled.
You liked it?
I did like it.
Cool.
I liked it a lot. And I'm not a big blockbuster gal. I'm not a big movie person. I did watch the movie, the documentary about Hulk Hogan and journalistic ethics twice. And that's usually what's a little more my speed. That one's not going to pass the Bechdel test. That's on me. I really enjoyed this movie. It was so much fun. I watched it two times.
Wow.
I did a Kaylin. I watched it one time and then I said, you know what? I could stomach this again. Which to me is like, wow, I must have really liked that movie.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. I don't like movies that much.
I know.
Yeah.
So welcome to our insane movie podcast.
I know, episode what? 50. There's...
I mean, it feels pretty breezy in comparison to like blockbusters now that are like 2.5 hours, like Transformers and all that stuff.
It's a quick one. Yeah. And it's also in, you know, still before the era, before like blockbusters had to be filtered through a blue filter. The whole thing is fucking blue. It's 3 hours long. And they're like, but it's really about philosophy. And well, like that... this movie is, I mean, it has met. You can unpack a lot, but they're not heaping it upon you. You can take it or leave it.
Sure.
It's a fun movie.
I mean, directed by Steven Spielberg, very competent director, one of my favorites.
So, well, I hope he uses that very confident. The Bechdel cast.
Yeah, you're welcome for my incredible endorsement, Steven. Anyway, it's just such a terrific movie, and it's
kind of nice. Like I was rewatching it, I kind of just wake up to it every day, just in my head. but like that, it is a movie where it has a lot of setup, and then once it lets go, then it's just kind of like going, and it doesn't necessarily stop. Other than when Dr. Sattler and Hammond eat ice cream, like that's the only slow scene.
Yeah.
Like once the action starts.
But I love that scene though.
Yeah, yeah.
You never had control. That's the illusion.
He's like, ugh. I think that scene would have been funnier if he dropped his ice cream spoon.
Oh, man. That's the thing. Like, there's so much foreshadowing and, like, plant and payoff in this movie. And it just shows so much restraint. We don't meet T-Rex until 1 hour and 3 minutes into the movie.
Miss T-Rex. Right.
Miss T-Rex.
Ms.
Yes. Ms.
T-Rex. You can tell because there's a bow. Because I had been on the Jurassic Park raft ride multiple times before seeing this movie for the first time, and then I went back to make sure that this story had started as, this is going to be a roller coaster eventually. And for sure it was, because Crichton, rest in paradise, apparently...
Allegedly,
I think it's a Kaufman-esque prank, and Crichton is still with us. But anyways, Crichton was writing the book, took a meeting with Spielberg talking about ER apparently, and he was like, "Hey, also I like dinosaurs," and this is what men talk about at lunch.
Yeah,
they're like, "Hey, yeah, I like trains and dinosaurs and fucking ladies," and Steven Spielberg said, "Well, what about dinosaurs?" And so he knew this was going to be a movie before he finished the book, and knew it was going to be a Spielberg movie. So he also knew it was going to be a roller coaster. Like knowing that and then watching the movie again, I was like, oh, this kind of informs the way a roller coaster would happen. You're not going to tote out the T-Rex right away.
Yeah, that's sure. Yeah, like
right. Totally. You gotta metaphorically
build to it.
Oh, this is another theme park ride movie.
Yeah, another roller coaster one.
Oh my gosh, you've had tons of them in the last couple episodes too.
We're gonna get around to the Country Bears, and I cannot wait. I'm sure that's a very pro woman movie. Everyone's gonna love it.
All right, let's talk about the portrayal of women in this podcast, in this movie,
in this podcast.
How do you talk? I don't know. So, as was hinted at earlier, Ms. T-Rex, because all the dinosaurs are women. They're female.
Right.
I like that. I like that all the dangerous killing machines
are women.
They're women.
But then also, they are being kept in captivity by mostly men.
Men.
So, yeah. I don't know. Steven, your take.
Yeah. But then they break free. Sorry.
Then they break free.
They do.
Well, that's actually one of my questions that I was curious to hear your thoughts on it, because it is that thing where it's like, and that's the one thing I kind of liked about Jurassic World, that Chris Pratt's character was so like, they're female dinosaurs, and he has this kind of like insistent, like OCD insistence that everyone refer to them as like she and all that stuff. But like, I guess my thought is,
we're allies.
Yeah.
We're dinosaur allies.
We're not going to misgender these dinosaurs. but yeah, I guess my question is, does them all being female really impact the narrative in a way, and like how does it really affect it? Or if
I mean,
it's just
no,
more of just like,
I was mostly saying it as a joke, but
well, no, I mean, that's just my curiosity about it, because it was really interesting when Hasbro released the Jurassic World toys, they called them all he, and like there's a big outcry in the community. Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
and stuff.
So in Jurassic World, they're all still,
yeah, they're
lady
all still
dinosaurs.
Female, yeah,
okay,
yeah, it's just one of those things where I feel like it maybe just plays the most into Dr. Sattler's line where, you know, women inherit the earth kind of thing. Like the idea that maybe these dinosaurs are like taking back from, you know, the patriarchy in society by destroying it all, or
I think
stuff
so.
Like that.
Well, it does play a significant role in the story in that they deliberately genetically engineer the dinosaurs to be all females so that they don't breed because they have to control their breeding.
Right.
But then life finds a way.
But, okay, here's, and this is maybe a stupid question from someone who just saw Jurassic Park for the first time. If, devil's advocate, they made all the dinosaurs men and there were no eggs to be stolen, wouldn't that have really fucked up the plot of the movie?
Yes, but
in
then
theory,
how
if
would
the
they...
dinosaurs were just coming... And then they were like, well, there goes that one.
Ned was just with like a bucket, just like roaming around the park.
A bucket of slop.
Like dino jizz?
Come in the slop bucket. All right. That's Jeff Goldblum's job. The dinosaurs come into the bucket.
Well, wouldn't they still need to be female to lay the eggs? Think, or how do they do that?
I think the ones that we see like with like B.D. Wong like in the beginning, I think those were... like artificially inseminated.
Mm.
But then the ones later in the movie are real eggs.
Right, that they find.
Right. Yeah. So like that would fuck up that point in the plot.
Yeah.
I'm just being critical of Crichton.
You know,
because that's what
fine.
I came here to do. But now he's dead and now I'm being disrespectful. I can't believe he's been dead for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
What did I think he was up to? No idea.
Being more anti-global warming stuff. Really,
yeah, he's a climate change denier.
He was. He's dead.
He's dead. Right.
Now he's one with the earth, which is fine, according to him.
I mean, he still is releasing novels, which is the weirder part.
He what?
They still keep finding manuscripts of books of his.
He needs to chill out.
Like, they just released a new one this year. Like,
that's why I thought he wasn't dead, because I was like, I've seen his name recently. Oh, but his ghost is just releasing books now.
Got it. Shout out to the movie Ghost.
Shout out to the movie Ghost. Shout out to Crichton's Ghost, which is a movie that I will write starting the second this podcast finishes recording.
I can't wait.
Crichton's Ghost.
More importantly than all the dinosaurs being female, let's talk about the actual human women in the movie. Dr. Ellie Sattler, a woman in STEM. Mm-hmm. She's a paleobotanist.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. And then there's Lex, who is a
hacker.
Computer hacker, a computer whiz.
Techno-pagan.
Mm-hmm. Either way.
I feel like that's what she'd grow up to be.
What, like, is a techno-pagan?
Like, it was in that X-Files episode, but I almost imagine, like, I was talking to somebody the other day, if there was, like, if her character was around in Jurassic World, she'd probably be, like, hacking into their systems to try and shut down the new park.
It's
like, desecrating the memory of her grandfather or something.
Got it. Okay.
I like it. I love hacking scenes, especially the further back you go, the crazier the hacking scenes get. The word mainframe is invoked quite a bit. I'm in the mainframe.
Yeah.
That's like on my bucket list of something to say and to know that that is actually what I mean to say.
Yeah.
I sometimes will just say it to myself when I like am at Dunkin' Donuts. I get into Wi-Fi.
I've hacked into the mainframe.
I'm in the mainframe. Anyways.
Either way, she's a woman in STEM, I would say. Technology.
Yeah.
She's a... That's so we've got two women in STEM. And then the only two women
End
in
of
the
women.
Movie.
Yeah. End of women. End of women.
I guess that's what I meant by my question with the dinosaurs being female. It's like, there's that thing where it's like, would it pass the Bechdel test if they were talking about the dinosaurs? Like, because it's like, does it count? Because they're not human. So like, is that part of that conversation?
If they are talking about dinosaurs, if it's two women talking about dinosaurs, yes. I would say it passes the Bechdel test because they're not human men. And also, we'll get to this later, but there's a scene where the two raptors are vocal with each other. They're communicating with their...
Stretch!
And I would say that passes the Bechdel test.
Stretch!
Well, we don't know their names.
Big ol' stretch!
We don't know those raptors' names, so maybe it doesn't pass. But
yeah, it's called Runner and Yeller.
So we have these two women, and I like these two women a lot, but they are surrounded by a whole slew of men because there's Dr. Alan Grant, Dr. Ian Malcolm, John Hammond, the little boy Tim, Mr. Arnold, Muldoon, Gennaro, Dennis Nedry, B.D. Wong.
Which brings us to the age-old Bechdel cast refrain. What if two or three of these characters were just named Cassandra? What would be different? Oh, I don't know. Fucking nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Make the lawyer be a woman. Have Mr. Arnold, although I would not trade Samuel L. Jackson in this role for the world.
Let's leave him be.
I did, for one website, I did a gender swap cast thing for this movie a couple years ago.
Ooh.
Which I thought, because Laura Dern was like an art house, like Lynch darling at this time. So I thought it'd be fun if like Ryan Gosling was playing that. And then having Elizabeth Moss be Grant. Like, I thought that would be like a good
I like it.
And having Kate Blanchett be John Hammond. I think she'd rock the cane
really well.
I like it.
For sure. I like that a lot.
We'll link that in the... I'm interested in this.
Yeah. I'll send you the link to it.
Cool. Yeah. Great. So the point is, it's a couple... I think strong, great female characters surrounded by men. And then there's all these scenes, like the first scene you see where they're unloading one of the raptors into like the raptor paddock and it's all men. And then there's another scene where Gennaro, the lawyer, goes to talk to the dude who's, I guess, in an amber mine. He's looking for amber. And those are all men in that scene. You see the scene where they're on the tour and it's all these Jurassic Park scientists. All but one man. There's one lady with a top bun. Everyone else is a man.
It's me.
It's you. Yeah.
You were in that scene.
You were in
this
movie.
I was a baby when this movie came out.
But the point is, it's just like crazy that we have to like look at these scenes and like really like examine and study to be like, wait, is that a woman? Wait, that over there? And it's because they're just almost always populated by men. And it's annoying that scenes like this default to just being filled with men and there being no or maybe one woman. So
I think, and I feel like with this story, it's possible to overanalyze it or like give it more thought about how much thought was put into gender than Michael Crichton would ever. May he rest in peace. But like, you know, it's like you can technically make the argument of, okay, we have this colony of all female dinosaurs, but they're being regulated and trying to be contained by men, but they're busting out and da-da-da. And, like, we can make this argument. I have a hard time believing that Michael Crichton or Steven Spielberg or really anyone involved in this project in a high level actually thought about the role of gender that hard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, you can analyze it that way if it makes you feel better, but I don't think that they actually intended it to
that's
be
the
that
beauty
way.
Of art, though. It doesn't matter what the artist intended,
but
it's how
I don't
want to
intend
it.
Art to give men more credit than they deserve.
Right, true.
Right.
Either way, okay, so there's like three specific sequences that I want to talk about, and then a few other scenes, starting with the one that you already hinted at, where Malcolm is like, God creates dinosaurs, God destroys dinosaurs, God creates man, man destroys God, man creates dinosaurs. And then Dr. Sattler says, dinosaurs eat man, women inherit the earth. And then they both look at her and they're like, oh shit, I want to marry her.
Bam, bam, bam. That's a good
line. It's such a great...
But I would also, argue that this is harkening back to one of our favorite McSweeney's articles, I'm the girl and I kick. Here's my line where I say, you know, or Spice World, girl power. Like, it's like, okay, cool. We got that moment. Thank you.
Sure.
And scene. Like,
well,
that's,
yeah, that could be if that was the only thing she does or like the only impressive thing she contributes to the story or anything like that.
No, I just meant like the line more than.
Oh, I see.
The character, obviously, Sattler is a great character.
Yeah.
But just like sometimes lines like that. I don't know. I feel manipulated by them where they're just like, hey, girls can do things too. And I was like, yeah, I know. So put more girls in your fucking movie, you chode. Like, you know.
Good point.
Go
but
Pella.
It would be much more, it would be more annoying to me if that was something she said and then none of her actions backed that up. Like,
right.
If she's like, women power. And then.
Out with someone.
Right. So at least she goes on to do a whole slew of things.
Sure.
Which is what I wanted to talk about next, where it's later in the movie, but all the power, they have to basically reboot all the systems and undo the damage that Dennis Nedry had done, who at this point in the story is dead, R.I.P.
He slipped on and then it was like, just love that little detail.
That little sound effect.
The slide whistle or whatever.
Yeah. I love that scene though,
that's
where he gets killed by the Dilophosaurus. Oh, fuck. It's so good. But so there's a scene where John Hammond is like, Muldoon, bring back my grandchildren. And Ellie's like, I'm going with him. So it was just like cool to see her making a choice, taking action, going and doing something. A lot of movies would have just had her stay behind, not do anything. Mm-hmm. Nurse Ian Malcolm back to health with his leg that's all fucked up.
And I'd be like, hey, do you want to take a picture?
Oh, I was thinking it would be like the Beguiled where they're like, oh, your leg is fucked up.
I'm gonna, I want to cut your leg off and then fuck you. Yeah. No, it's Jeff Goldblum. He just wants to take a perverted picture.
Right. Yeah, he doesn't actually have sex. He just wants to look like enticed or whatever, or enticing or whatever.
Right. He really does just like want to go home and feed his dogs.
But that's what I find so interesting about Dr. Sattler, because I was trying to think of her. Like, because there is certain scenes in the movie where she takes the role of kind of like the person to like knock the sense into some of the dudes, you know?
Yeah.
But what I like about her character a lot, and why, like, I mean, she was my first crush growing up and all that stuff or whatever. But the one reason why I really like her as a character in these kind of movies is because she seems like she's the only person who's living in the moment during the movies. Everyone's kind of caught in their headspace of like, oh, I should have like made this park better, or like, oh, I hate kids and I need to learn how to like kids or whatever. She's like, all right, what do you need? What do we need to do? Like, how can I? She's like the most, like how you're saying, like she's the most proactive character. She's like, oh, I'm going to stay behind and learn more about this sick Triceratops. Like, yeah. Or whatever. Like,
and I like right. that scene because it shows that whole scene where they encounter the sick Triceratops. And it's barfing.
She pops the pimple on its tongue.
God. It's so gross. And so she's sick. Like, well, why is it sick? Are they eating this West Indian lilac? It's poisonous. You really like get to see her expertise.
Yeah.
Like she's she knows what she's talking about. She knows what she's doing. So it was just like a cool moment. So many movies, especially blockbusters, would have been like, she kind of can do a thing, sort of, but like we don't really get to see it, or if we do, it's for a second and then never again.
Right. Or she gives the sick Triceratops true love's kiss and it's better.
Wakes up.
Yeah.
Or I'm feel better now.
Ooh, yeah. And that's technically a great queer moment in film, because the Triceratops would be a woman. Remember when Laura Dern Frenched that dinosaur? Really progressive moment.
Right.
That's David Lynch's Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Okay, so then after Dr. Grant and the kids have like gone off somewhere and they appear to be safe, and then there's the scene where Mr. Arnold leaves to go turn the power back on, but he's taking a while because he's like, it would be 3 minutes. And then it's like a smoke more than break. That. Yeah, right. More time has passed. So she's like, something's wrong. Something happened. I have to go turn the power back on. Mm-hmm. And then in that moment, that's when like Muldoon's like, I'll go with you. She was the one to be like, I'm going. I'm making the decision to go. Right. I got to do this. And he goes with her. And then immediately as soon as they get outside, he's like, we're being hunted. Oh, but before that happens, John Hammond's like, it should be me that goes. Because I'm a, and you're a.
I forgot about that.
And she's
yeah.
like, look.
Discuss. I'm a Republican. I would love if that was their fundamental oh, yeah. difference. Laura Dern, the twist is, she's a Republican.
I'm a Democrat and you're a Republican. Yeah. No, and she's like, we can discuss sexism in survival situations when I get back. Which, again, sure, maybe that's another, like, mm-hmm. oh, look at what I can do. Uh-huh. But I've never interpreted it that way. I was just like, look, you go, girl. But maybe it's because I'm simple.
But that was the point. But I, you know, if I had seen this movie when I was a kid, I wouldn't feel that way. But mm-hmm. seeing as I saw it last week, I do feel that way.
Sure. So they go, they get hunted. She has to go on by herself. Mm-hmm. So she goes into the shed.
I was just, when I was, again, like thinking about this movie for today, as a kid, after I saw this movie, anytime I swing from branches, I would always like pretend I was her, because her sick Ooh. Swing that she does, she's like, boom, and then like lands in the water. I just thought that was the coolest
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, that was a good plant.
Good swing.
Good swing. Stuck the landing.
Yeah. So she goes in the shed, and then she does all the things she needs to do to turn the power back on. She's being, again, told what to do by a man.
But like, that's not her area of right, expertise.
Exactly. Yeah. So she manages to do everything. All the systems come back online. And then there's that great moment where she's like, Mr. Hammond, I think we're back in business. And then a raptor bursts out. And what I really love about this is that she has to save herself. The raptor explodes out into the room. Mm-hmm. She gets through the gate.
Woman-to-woman combat.
Case. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the human succeeds over the raptor.
Yeah.
Because the human, I guess, is smarter. Although the raptors have shown intelligence. They're systematically testing the fences for weaknesses. Anyway.
Systematically. She beats him with Sam Jackson's arm.
That would have been a great moment. I wish that had happened.
She like grabs that Mr. Arnold and then she's like, oh, sweet, this is a weapon.
All right.
Yeah.
Good enough.
Right, because so she saves herself, she closes the door, and then she like sort of is like, oh, okay. And then Mr. Arnold's arm falls on top of her. She thinks, hey, I'm just resting my arm here. I know that you almost died, but let's have a casual arm rest.
How many years of therapy will it take to bounce back from that?
So many.
So many.
The point is, she saves herself. She doesn't have to have any man save her. Mm-hmm. It was a very exciting moment for me. The next scene I wanted to talk about was when the kids are in the kitchen, or like the whatever that area is, like the guest services.
It's house. Basically craft services.
They just turn the cameras and just...
Yeah, they're like, oh, hey, look.
Right, and they're eating Jell-O, you know, as craft services always has. And Lex sees the raptors and takes them into the kitchen, and the raptors can open doors.
What the
Those
hell?
Smart-ass lady dinosaurs it's figured like out how to open doors.
It's like a cat in an emergency on the news.
Yeah. What if they had...
It dialed 911.
The cat figured out how to open a door, saving all the people in the apartment complex. An exciting day here in Brighton.
That would happen in Brighton.
It would happen. Yeah, this is my English news bit.
I'm done. If like a dinosaur is like a cat, they just like under the door, like how cats can slide under. So the raptor's just like on the, you know, blows its nose on the thing and then just slides.
It liquefies itself basically like a cat.
Yeah. So the two raptors come into the kitchen. Lex with her younger brother, Tim, she's the one who's like pulling him around. Like, here, follow me. Like, da-da-da. She's doing all the things to save them.
It's the sweet trick with the
ladle.
Yeah, and the oven thing too with the mirror.
Oh, right, yeah.
Very alpha big sis.
And it could be, it could be because she's like the older one, the bigger one. But
sure, but like who cares?
Right.
She's the older one.
Right. And the writer could have made the choice to like make the older one a boy to have him be the one.
In the book, Tim is the older one.
Oh,
the ages were switched.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So yeah. I like in the movie that they're like, all right, let's have the girl be the one who's
Spielberg, one point.
Stuff. Yeah.
Crichton, still a climate change denier, also dead. He loses.
So yeah, it was really cool to see Lex being the one to be like, I'm in charge here and I'm going to save my little brother.
Yeah, I like that part.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, and she like closes the freezer too.
Right, yeah.
It's interesting that the only, now that I'm thinking about this, technically, I think in all the Jurassic Park movies, the only two people to kill dinosaurs are Lex freezing that raptor and then Malcolm's daughter, Kelly, with the gymnastic skills in The Lost World, kicking the raptor off onto the spike. So it's only been two little girls killing dinosaurs in these movies.
Hell yeah.
I like that, though. Yeah, that's impressive. Yeah, but you're right. The raptor ends up in the freezer. I think because he was like chasing Tim into it.
Yeah.
She was just sorry. Oh, God.
She was
chasing Tim into the freezer. And then Lex runs up and locks the raptor into the freezer. Hell yeah.
R.I.P. Raptor.
Yeah.
It froze to death in there, presumably. We don't know.
Whatever.
So then the final scene is when they're in the control room at the end. Ellie like runs to the computer. She's like, I got to boot up the door locks. Because I guess she knows how to do that, which good for her. And then the raptor starts coming in through the door because, again, raptors know how to open doors.
Any door.
Any door.
They've mastered all doors.
All doors.
Round doorknob. Shit.
Right.
The rotating doors, there aren't any of those.
That would be fun if there was, though.
Would its tail get, would her tail get stuck in the door?
I know, we keep accidentally misgendering these dinosaurs.
It depends on how advanced the door was, because if the door had good sensors, then the door wouldn't close on an object in, you know, in front of the door. Sure. So in defense of the doors, I'm sure that the raptor would have been fine.
Good point.
Thank you. This is the door cast.
Okay, so they're in the control room. And the raptor starts to come in, and Grant can't hold the door by himself, so Ellie Sattler has to help him. Meanwhile, Lexi's like, wait a minute, a Unix system, I know this. She's the one to save the day for about 2 seconds, and then the raptors come in through the glass. But it was just cool, like, the choice could have been made where the little boy knows how to be a hacker. Mm-hmm. But Tim is, like, useless in that scene. He's just like,
he's a
come
kid!
On. Well, kids are useless.
Hey, go to school. Get a library card, you dumbass. He's a little kid.
I mean, that would have been, I think maybe Spielberg was like thinking the end game was like, oh, well, because there's the gun there. And then like Ellie and Grant are like trying to get the gun, but hold the door. And they're like, Tim, give us the gun. And then Tim just shoots the raptor. And then we've got like our own traumatized like child. Like,
well, I never understood why they don't say like, Tim, grab that gun, give it to an adult. Help us. But he's just
maybe Spielberg, because it's so like, because he's just sitting there like patting his head, yeah, just like because he is a kid.
Tim reminded me of my little brother, where like I would freeze a dinosaur for my brother, and also he was such a wimpy little kid, he was afraid of water till he was like 7, so I was like, oh, he's like my brother, he's probably afraid of the ocean.
Yeah, I mean, I related too. I probably would be too afraid to do anything in that situation.
Just a paralyzed little boy child.
But, I wonder if Spielberg maybe just didn't want to have the imagery of a kid picking up a gun. I wonder, because that's definitely like a...
He's all about family, family dynamics.
Seems responsible.
I mean, he did remove the guns from...
2 points for him now.
But he did remove the guns from one version of E.T. Like, from all the... Like, digitally remove all the guns.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
3 points for Spielberg.
Yeah. I'm excited to see... Because this ending scene is really cool, and it's hard to imagine how it would have originally been, where like Grant was gonna kill the raptors with like a crane that was like sitting in the visitor center, like he was gonna like grab a raptor and then like throw it at the bones, and like that's how it originally was supposed to end. But I think they were so impressed by the CGI test of the T-Rex, and they liked the character so much, they're like, let's bring her back at the very end. And I don't know, it feels more. It would feel kind of gross if, like, our hero just, like, straight up murdered 2 dinosaurs. Like, the whole movie, the whole movie is, like, trying to say that they're, like, animals and they're just natural creatures. And then it's, like...
It's not their fault that they were genetically engineered and put in this century that they don't belong
in. By a bunch of horny dudes. Not their fault.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. If I were to put Alfred Molina in this movie...
Okay.
Here's what I would do. I would keep the casting as is. What I'd do is I would pull like a Deep Roy in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory Tim Burton version, where Deep Roy plays all of the Oompa Loompas, like hundreds and hundreds of Deep Roys. So this would take most of the women out of the movie, but I think it is the move to make Alfred Molina all of the dinosaurs. Hundreds of him.
I've decided not to endorse this.
He's a character actor. He could really, really bring something special to each dinosaur role. I would love to see Alfred Molina play sick Triceratops.
Oh, God.
Somebody should Photoshop that for sure.
Yeah.
Because they just Photoshopped what? Like cats in there, the dinosaurs from that comedy there.
Yeah.
So now just calls out for Bechdel cast fans to Photoshop Alfred Molina in those same positions.
Make Alfred Freddy. Into sick Triceratops. Sure. A real missed opportunity, but, you know, it's an all right.
Hey, listen to this segue. It's about love, the love that you have for Alfred Molina, and how I like that there's no discernible love story in this movie.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing that would have been so... And I went into the movie just knowing who the cast was. I was like, oh, well, someone's gonna...
I mean, they both want to fuck her, it seems.
Well, yeah. They're horny dinosaur guys.
Right. But here's something I've been confused about. So Dr. Grant tells Dr. Malcolm that he and Ellie are together. And I always assumed that that was just because Dr. Grant has a crush. But then I was like, well, are they together? They kind of like, at one point, Ellie calls him honey. and they like hug a lot. And I'm like, maybe they are low key dating, but the movie just makes not a big deal of it at all.
Well, because like Grant's such a sourpuss that he's probably like he's not he doesn't seem like a PDA type.
Right.
And there was definitely right. more. There was definitely more like because I have like all the trading cards and stuff for Dress Spring. there's like cut shots and cut moments where like they are more physical. But I think but I think maybe there's even one where they high five, which again adds more to their weird asexual. I mean, it's more on Sam Neill's part, not on Laura Dern's part.
I love to high five my sex partners.
That's honestly how I initiate sex. Right. High five. What's up? We're doing this now?
Caitlin and I just had sex on the air.
I'm very honored to be
Big
here.
Big Bechdel moment.
It ends with Grant like wanting the kids or being like, hey, kids. And then
he's like hugging him.
Yeah.
They're in his arms on the helicopter.
You
he's
know
looking
that
at
wears
pelicans.
Off after a couple of days. Like, so the second someone shits their pants, he's like, actually, I'm out. I know that they're too old to be shitting their pants, but one of them is going to at some point.
Tim throws up.
Well, he was electrocuted, so he probably did shit himself.
Right.
He's having bowel problems
The second,
big side effect.
The second one of those kids takes a shit, he's going to be like, you know, I remember why I hate kids.
I was going to just say, if anything, because it's that thing where it's like Grant is almost the main character in that sense where he's the one who goes on this journey to like, oh, I understand kids now or something, you know. But it's like kind of nice that I think in this story in specific that Dr. Sattler isn't like, you need to have kids or we need to get married or anything. She's just like, yeah, kids are cool, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. Whatever. It's like almost like, I don't know. It's like they kind of nice. They don't like make that a big dramatic thing at all or anything.
Right. Yeah. There were a lot of points in the movie where I'm like, oh, this could have been turned into a weird romantic kind of, I mean, all throwaway moments, but blockbusters do it all the time. And it was kind of like a pleasant surprise. It was like, oh no, they're just going to keep moving forward with the story.
Yeah.
Great.
Big
like
fan
it.
Of that. There's that famous scene in Jurassic World where Bryce Dallas Howard is running away from the T-Rex in high heels. And it's famous because it's so absurd, especially because T-Rex runs at 32 miles an hour and she could not outrun him, especially in heels. So I just want to say that I really like that Dr. Sattler's costume in this movie was very reasonable. No one felt any need to put her in high heels for no reason. Mm-hmm. And another thing with a lot of blockbusters is that the one adult woman is very hot, very sexual. Well, we already talked about Michael Crichton making all the scientists hot, but she
Crichton
wasn't
heads unite.
She wasn't she wasn't overly sexualized or even sexualized at all, as far as I interpreted it. Like, she's just wearing practical clothes that you would wear on a dinosaur safari.
Yeah. I mean, I think her khakis are the same length as Gennaro's, you know, like
he's wearing some short shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also noticed in
cutoffs.
Very, very sensible.
Is he a never nude? I love his death scene. He just runs into the bathroom and then the T-Rex is like, yeah.
We're Foley artists.
With dinosaurs, you
can't
help.
People are going to rip this audio and use it in their movies, and then we're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, please donate to our PayPal account. We'll get into that in a second.
Yeah, hey, do you want to hear me bark like a dog? Pretty good.
Really good. Really good.
Pay me before you use that clip.
One last thing.
I'm going to be a millionaire.
B.D. Wong, Henry Wu, I think is his name. He says, all vertebrate embryos are inherently female anyway. They require an extra hormone given at the right developmental stage to make them male, proving? This movie proves this fact that no one else knew or studied or anything.
Crichton heads unite.
That all embryos are female, which is why male cats have as many nipples.
Ooh, there it is.
As female cats. This has been Cat Facts with Caitlin. Okay.
Yeah, that is inherently pointless, that women aren't going to inherit, they're going to re-inherit the Earth again in that way.
Yeah.
Movie's saying.
Yeah. Yes, queen.
All right, let's talk about if this movie passes the Bechdel test or not.
Okay.
I made a case for the raptors talking
wrong.
To each
You're
other.
Right. No, stupid and wrong.
There's a scene that happens off screen where women talk, but it does not pass the Bechdel test, where Lex goes up to Grant and she's like, she thought I should ride with you because it would be good for you. but they were talking about...
They're referring to Grant.
...a man, so it does not pass. Here's the problem with this movie is that the two female characters are not even in the same room or scene for most of the movie. There is the scene in the control room at the end whenever they run in and Lex says, "We can call for help." And Sattler says, "We got to reboot the system first." I think that's a pass.
That I did make note of that. And that might be by the skin of its teeth, might mm-hmm. be where it passes.
Yeah.
For me. That's what. But it is a barely pass.
A barely pass. And it's the only time where you basically see those two.
And it's a classic. I mean, it's the thing we've encountered, I would say, in at least 10 movies we've talked about now, where it's like the female, it's the problem isn't the female characters that are written. It's just the fact that there are no female characters for them to interact with mm-hmm. at length ever.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my question. It was like, it just seems like, feels like every time it's like they can't have two women together because that's, oh, we've already hit our maximum or something. Like, it just seems like these movies
are so afraid
to like just put two.
That somehow, yeah, like, and I think that this era, like 93, is still a time where it's like, well, why would we put two women together in one scene? Right. What purpose would
we
that
filled
serve,
our quota you know? With two women characters total. We don't need more.
Right, right. And we're not forcing them to hook up all the time, which is like, you know, good, but like, you know, so this, I would say that that was a scene where it passed for me, mm-hmm. but I was still like, oh man, you were doing so well.
Yep.
But it's another Princess Leia kind of thing where mm-hmm. it's like, well, one female character is great. And then we have, you know, a few women on the fringe. But other than that, you know, it's just like one really well-written female character and only men for her to talk to.
Right.
Well, that's what I like about your podcast so much, because it's like, it's almost that idea of like, well, because I love the Transformers episode where you're like, well, this, it doesn't feel right to pass it because it, even though it gets in like logically, but in the spirit of like what the test is, it's like, does it really actually like in that sense right. of like this movie where like it has a lot of these like mic drop, like kind of empowering moments. And I remember Steven Spielberg and behind the scenes stuff saying that he made Lex the older one, made the woman, in, you know, made Lex interested in computers and made her the hacker because he was like, these are aspirational elements that he was adding. Like in his words, that's what he was saying, that he made those choices to do that because he wanted to inspire little girls to get into technology and stuff.
Cool.
But it's like, but at the same time, like, oh, but it actually doesn't feature two women having a conversation with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. That's not about men. So it's like, right. It's yeah. just like, I like that you guys talk about that a lot because it's like, I don't know. Just
you're welcome.
Oh, okay.
I mean, thank you.
You're welcome. No, we both did it.
Yeah. Hey, let's rate the movie on our nipple scale.
Ba, 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 ba.
I'm going to give it 3.5 nipples.
Ooh.
I think it might be a little high. No, I feel good about 3.5 because Dr. Sattler is a great character. She does a whole bunch of shit. She makes a lot of decisions that influence the story. She is very proactive. She unfortunately doesn't have the same number of like memorable lines or like great monologues like Malcolm has. I do like that she says the whole like men get eaten and women inherit the earth. That's the line, right? So I like her, and I also like that Lex is, like you said, like she was, decisions were made to make her active. She does things. She fucking boots up the door locks. Good for her. But because there are so few women, when there could be many more, again, we identified several characters that, like, why not make this a woman? It's just a sea of men with, like, tiny little sprinkles of strong women in it. So that's why it gets a 3.5 from me. Mm-hmm. And the nipples belong to, you know what? I'm pretty sure that Triceratops, even though reptiles do not have nipples, that looked like an animal that would have nipples. So,
That's more revealing about you than anything else. You're just like, that looks like there's some milk in there. Like,
didn't it though?
I don't know. I would like to believe that there's. Oh, I just had a disgusting thought because it's both very cheesy and harkens back to an episode that by the time this comes out will have been a long time ago. Spider-Man 2 reference, got Molina on the brain. You know that line where where Aunt what's her name is like, I believe there's a hero in all of us. What if she said that but said milk? I believe there's some milk in all of us. That was the vibe you were just putting. You were Aunt May with it. Anyways,
thank
I finished
you.
My Mike's Hard Lemonade.
I finished my
And
wine.
I'm really thinking at a higher level.
Steven, what would you like to rate the movie?
Ooh, I would give it 3 sweaty lawyer nipples out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Again, for the reasons that this movie has... I mean, I think, like... comedian Rhea Butcher, she summed up Jurassic World in a really great way, which is like a 90s version of a feminist movie where it's like, let's give the main female character shit. And then
right.
like, that's how you learn that she's empowered or whatever. And I feel like even this movie still suffers from a lot of that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it is like, there is those badass moments. And I think, again, like the through line is that at least Dr. Sattler's character, she like stays true to herself and she doesn't like, she's kind of on her own path that it's kind of like mysterious. She's kind of like, she kind of holds the rest of the movie at arm's length, which I kind of like. She's kind of like amused by like what's going on and concerned, but she's never like, and she's in the moment. And I kind of like that about her character.
My favorite scene is when she's crying and then she's like, I need ice cream. And she eats some ice cream because women be crying, women be eating ice cream.
But like, honestly, sometimes they are.
I've done it.
For instance, me yesterday. Let me take you back a full 12 to 16 hours. Anyways.
Steven, I'm sure you've cried and eaten ice cream. Have you done
yeah.
that?
Of course.
Okay, it's not a gender thing. It's a human thing.
I saw a man crying into ice cream just the other day. Not to brag.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But I saw it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've probably cried while eating ice cream while watching this movie.
Wow.
This is a movie I do cry to, by the way.
It's more of a human response.
Exactly.
It's not a gendered response. Everyone wants to cry and eat ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that all people want, except for lactose intolerance. They're mutants.
You're fucking freaks.
This is my new frontier of people I'm prejudiced against. Steampunks, you're okay now. Lactose intolerant people,
what if I told
you're
you?
On my radar. I'm coming for you.
What if I told you I was lactose intolerant, which I am?
I knew that, and now I feel bad. First, because I didn't remember, and second, because I just declared war on you, and I can't take it back.
I'll fight back. I'm a strong, independent woman.
You're very strong, but you're calcium deficient because you're not drinking as much milk as me.
Don't even get me started on how
so strong.
People should not be consuming dairy or any mammals after infancy.
That sounds like some real lactose intolerant propaganda to me. I breastfed from my mom just this morning, and I feel great.
Hey, what would you like to rate the movie?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to give it 3 nippies.
Okay.
And I'll give 2 of the nippies. Well, I'll give 1 nippy to little Tim because I can relate with being afraid and the youngest and being completely useless. So you got to give 1 to Tim. And then I'm going to give the other 2 to the sick dinosaur. Because
it has nipples.
It has nipples, and it's I just love that a sick dinosaur. You never think of a dinosaur as sick, so in that way, it fucking changed the way I think about dinosaurs.
And specifically, female dinosaurs. What great representation!
I never thought of female dinosaurs as sick before. I saw this movie, and then I realized I was so fucking wrong.
That's
so
okay.
3, but for serious talk, because like many movies we've discussed, the central female character is wonderful, but she's not given really any or barely anyone to talk to. And I sort of am inclined to discard like, well, all the dinosaurs are female.
Right.
Great. But they're dinosaurs. So not to trigger any dinosaur listeners we have out there, but you're dinosaurs. So in that way, I'm going to give it a 3.
Perfect. Steven, thank you so much
for
being
you.
Here.
No, I'm really happy you guys asked me. I really love this podcast a lot, so I'm happy to have been on it.
Awesome. Where can people find you online?
You can always find me at Steven Ray Morris on Twitter and Instagram. And then my Jurassic Park podcast is at See Jurassic Right on things. And like, yeah, it's just people sharing stories of their childhood that only relate to Jurassic Park and dinosaurs. Because that's the niche that I'm trying to fill.
You found it, baby.
You're doing great work. Yeah. Very important.
Yep.
You can follow us at Bechdelcast on Twitter, Instagram, on Facebook.
Hey, come see us live in New York in September.
Mm-hmm. For the Cinder Block Comedy Festival.
What's the date? What's the place?
September 9th. We'll post about it.
Hell fucking yeah. See you there.
See you there. Also, if you want to give us money to alleviate the financial burden that is being alive, but mostly doing a podcast.
To be fair, listeners, none of us asked to be born.
But if you want to help us with some of our production costs for the podcast, you can donate a few dollars on PayPal, which is an evil corporation, but... What else is there? Write us a check.
For more information, watch the Hulk Hogan journalistic ethics documentary twice.
But you can go to paypal.me/Bechdelcast. We'd appreciate any donation you would care to give. That'll do it. Women, inherit the earth.
Bitch.